Good morning. Today is Tuesday, November the 17th, 318th day of the new year. Joining us this morning from, well, the water guy, general manager out of the Humboldt Municipal Water District, Mr. Paul Hellicker. Hey, guy. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm fine.
Are you ready for Thanksgiving?
I am looking forward to it.
I've been asking everybody, turkey or ham?
Both.
Really?
Well.
You do both?
One day and one the next day.
Oh, a double dipper. What a stunner.
Don't forget the tofu.
Forget it. I ignore it. That's an overt thing. Yes. Our quote this morning comes from Satchel Paige. I think everybody's heard about this one. Don't look back. Something might be gaining on you. I think it might be the calendar.
Maybe so.
I was talking to somebody yesterday, and I said, yeah, so how do we get this late into November? I said, November, isn't it September? We both laughed and then cried a little bit, too.
Winter's coming on.
So it's been a little bit since we've seen you, Paul. What's going on with the water situation for our part of the state? Is it as dire as what the governor was anticipating when he started whipping all these edicts out, or is it something a little bit different?
I think you may recall that we were fortunate to get the administration to recognize the fact that we have fairly average levels of precipitation and storage up here, but the situation for us is that we do have extra water because of the fact that we don't supply the pulp mills anymore. So they were willing to give us a reprieve from the onerous conservation requirements. So among our customers here, it's averaging about a 4% reduction requirement.
And those numbers are being hit?
More or less, I think, if you look at
a resounding,
it varies. I mean, McKinleyville, you look at McKinleyville Community Services District, people there have really taken up the challenge, and I think they're saving about 20%.
Yeah, I know Greg said that they, hit a grand slam in the bottom of the ninth.
Yeah, of course, it's had an impact on their finances, but...
Well, and that's the thing that I am always curious about when the government does some of these... edicts, I guess, is probably the best phrase, most polite phrase I can think of. They don't look at the second level, let alone the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and then where reality really hits. It's like with the mileage with the cars. Okay, well, if you predicate things on gas tax and these things don't need as much gas, guess what?
That's right.
Less revenue. But yet it seems like, the sky is falling when it hits. Same thing with the water. If the consumption isn't there, duh. There's going to be less revenue generated.
That's right. I think they're doing okay this year. If this continues on next year and we have these requirements and people continue to conserve, then that will be a time when we'll have to deal with some of the implications. But you asked about the other situation. Arcata, the people there have been generally using a lot less water on average than other parts of the state. So it was hard for them to cut back. So they're not quite meeting their 4% requirement. Our own retail customers, we have a fairly diverse mix of different types of customers, one of which is the Fairhaven Power Plant. And they've been producing a lot of energy this summer because it's been so warm in the rest of the state. They use water to do that because they need it for their cooling tower. And one month we were actually 20% increase over the 2013 baseline. So we've had a special alternative compliance mechanism that they've given us.
Is that like special dispensation?
It's
from the Vatican?
Kind of like that, from the Vatican, yeah. Now, we demonstrated that we have this unusual mix of customers, and they really didn't want to tell us to cut back 4% when that was going to have an implication for the power plant. What were they going to do, reduce their power production?
Right. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:19.
You've never heard us before, because we're something brand new. It's called Destination Radio. If you live in Ferndale or Gold Beach, Blue Lake or Klamath, Brookings or Eureka, you'll be looking for someplace different to take the family, something special to do next weekend. The best destinations for day trips and overnights, for hiking or biking, for beachcombing or birdwatching, and you'll turn to us for ideas, because you're the reason we're here, to help you find your close-to-home destination. Stay, play, and relax with us, Destination Radio.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Paul Hilliker. Paul, before the break, we were talking a little bit about some of the state mandates and whether or not, though, with water reduction, if those have been hit or not. But you said something about next year, question mark. Is there any over-under at this point yet about next year and whether or not this is going to continue? As I know, a lot of us had concern that here comes a state bureaucracy. They don't unwind those things, even in spite of having an El Nino more than likely coming through the state.
I think you hear different themes. The governor and the state agencies, they're a little concerned about what happens if we do have a dry year. I think we've got the graphs here that show where the El Nino predictions are headed. So I think that we're going to see some rainfall. How much exactly it will be and where it will be in the state is not exactly clear. But I think they're just trying to be good Boy Scouts and be prepared. But if we do get into the wintertime, do have a lot of rain, as we've already seen starting to happen in Southern California, then I think we're going to be faced with the prospect of looking at flood control measures rather than worried about water conservation.
So there's a mechanism there to pull it out.
The current situation is that the governor issued an executive order in April of this year, which laid out all of these goals that he'd like to set, including the 25% statewide reduction in water use. So if it looks like the reservoirs are coming up and we're not going to be needing so much water supply for all of the areas that are very dry, I can't imagine the governor would say, well, we still have to do a 25% conservation measure.
Well, that was one of the questions that I had with this. We talk about El Nino nationally. We talk about El Nino regionally and locally. Dandy. But as much as anything, it's not, my understanding is, it's not the water, it's where the water falls.
If it's
in the north end, okay, we can cover it. You know, we got lakes and that kind of stuff, and they'll fill up. If it all happens in Southern California, does it do a lick of good?
It helps with their reservoirs down there, but those are not where the big reservoirs are in the state. And it'll help with reducing demand over the course of the spring and the summer. But you're right. where we really need the rainfall and the snow in particular is in the Sierra and in the Cascades, above Shasta, above Oroville, and so on.
Upstream?
Upstream, yes. I think we will find ourselves in a situation like we have for the past few years, which is that if we get one or two good rainstorms, our reservoir will fill up and we'll have plenty of water.
Yeah, thank you very much. Okay, we're full again. What about snowpack? Is there any, with the prediction maps that are in place, is there anything associated with snowpack, projected temperatures, things of that nature that, yeah, at least if you listen to some of the experts that people turn to, they talk about snowpack being more critical sometimes than the reservoirs being at capacity.
I think that the long-term trends are likely to be the temperatures are going to increase, and that means that we'll probably have more precipitation in the form of rain than snow. The problem with that is that the way the California water system is structured, the snowpack provides about the same amount of storage as all the reservoirs along the Sierra Nevada do. And so what the snowpack does is it stretches out that water storage, because if it comes as rain in the springtime and in the wintertime, then you can store as much as you can, but you also have to leave room for flood control.
So it's almost like a double capacity.
A double whack, yeah.
Yeah.
If you're losing snowpack, that's going to be a big problem.
With the El Nino, I know in the past there's been El Ninos that come through and it's really warm.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the El Ninos with the timing or the jet stream have it in the mountains when it's cold. Is there any prediction about the jet stream in association with the El Nino along the Cascades?
I think that the research is focusing on what the temperature distribution is in the Pacific Ocean, and they've looked at the previous El Nino years and how this one compares in terms of the temperatures. It's kind of unusual, the northerly extent of how the warm temperatures are distributed. So it's a little hard to predict what that will mean. But overall, I think we're seeing that the temperature distribution is similar to some of the biggest El Nino years, 97 and 83. So it could be a gully washer.
Yeah, we saw that one when we were in Nevada. We happened to escort it into Las Vegas, that storm a couple of last month.
Yes.
Yeah, it was like,
thank goodness you weren't swamped with mud.
Another Pabstein factor. No, we just brought it in. It was a really weird lightning storm, though, the whole way down, 2-3 a minute. Just, it was really interesting. But to see in the desert, actual, what I would have called rivulets, you know, foot down, foot wide. Okay, I get it now. Even with a half inch, I get it now. So if there is a lot of the El Nino, does that make it to the Rockies?
Yes.
Where there is a guarantee that there is going to be snow pack for Southern California to draw off of out of the Colorado?
Usually if the rainstorms come in off the Pacific and sweep over California, they go straight over to the Rockies as well.
So that could be our backup.
It will help with the water supply situation statewide because the Colorado River does supply Southern California.
Yeah, I think something, was it a hijack? Is that the right word with water? Or with theft? I'm not sure. What do we use for the eel?
They stole it fair and square. What are you talking about?
Yeah, that's the phrase that they use. swine. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:30. We'll be back with more from Paul.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Paul Heliker from Humboldt Municipal Water District. Paul, some of the different challenges I know that we've had this year, we talked a little bit about this upcoming year, the fires. You know, and we were all engrossed with that during the active fire season, and hopefully we'll make it through and we don't have any more references. But when a fire goes through, obviously it burns all the ground cover. And the ground cover is what allows a lot of the water to get into the dirt and stay there instead of washing down the hills. Because you guys and gals are involved as you are, where you are you concerned about significant levels of erosion this year because of a heavy rainfall and barren hillsides?
We are. Excuse me. We are, yes. In fact, there's a team of researchers from Oregon State who make their living looking at sedimentation into reservoirs, and they are up at the Ruth Lake right now. They're going to be doing a research project that looks at a number of tributaries around the lake to see how sediment levels are increasing or decreasing. And if you've seen the maps of where the fire activity was around Ruth Lake, it was all around on the ridges. The Gobbler Fire was to the west, and the Mad River Complex was to the east. And the eastern slopes, which are the higher ones, really suffered. And a lot of the vegetation was burned to the point where I don't think the trees are going to survive. On the other parts of the watershed, you did have a lot of the undergrowth burn. But most of the areas, I think the trees will continue to survive. So, but we will see ash and probably some of the soil wash down into the reservoir. The good thing is that the reservoir is a reservoir, and it will stop there and probably won't move much further downstream. But we'll be looking at are there any impacts on water quality and what the reservoir conditions will be. The Oregon.
So you're worried about the water quality. I was thinking fill it in. That capacity would become less and less.
That too. The part of what the Oregon State team will be looking at is the contours of the reservoir, and it's called bathymetry, the survey. And they'll be doing a survey before the rainy season in 2 weeks, before it really gets going, and then afterwards to see what kind of changes might have happened.
Does the lake get dredged?
We have never dredged it. We've looked at the sediment rates in the past, in the 1976-77 drought, typically sediment will deposit at the upper end of the reservoir.
Where, oh, really?
Yeah.
Not, not at the deep end?
No, it usually doesn't get down that far because it's carried along by the streams coming in, and the Mad River is upstream. And then when it hits the reservoir and it slows down, that's when the particles drop out.
You mean like where there's current?
Yeah.
It stays, and when there's not, it drops? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Duh. All right, well, I guess I got a D on that test, huh?
Well, it's counterintuitive.
Yeah.
You think it fills up by the dam.
Well, so you're worried about the particulate matter, but you're also worried about the quality of the water as well?
Well, the material that gets suspended in the water and continues to flow through the reservoir and downstream, we're a little worried about what that ultimately will mean in terms of when it gets down to our intakes.
You gumming up the works?
One of the concerns that drinking water regulators have is how much carbon is there in the water, and that's related to the particulates. And
it's the byproduct of a fire is
exactly
yeah.
And part of the reason for the concern is that anytime you disinfect, you put chlorine into a water body, and you have carbon, little organic material particles in the water. Those can react and create compounds that are a water quality problem.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Disinfection byproducts is what they're called. So
huh.
It's ironic. We disinfect water to prevent people from suffering from waterborne diseases, so we don't want to have them suffer from cholera. But by doing the effective type of disinfection that we do with chlorine, you can create these other consequences. So it's always...
So like a fir tree can... Whatever's left, the ash from a fir or a pine tree, can turn into something when in combination with whatever they disinfected?
Yeah, that. And if you think about water as it flows through the vegetation, it'll pick up little bits of organic material. And it's those things that if they're not filtered out, and if they're really, really small, they can react with the chlorine.
Okay. So it's not the bear in the woods that you're worried about.
Well, we are that.
Or signs of the bear in the woods.
That's why we do the chlorine, but the rest of it. But we've never had problems with any of those types of contaminants.
In this situation with the fires and the marijuana grows, do you think it's going to neutralize some of the nitrogen that would historically have been in there? Or do you think it's going to compound the nitrogen that's going to be found in the water as it's entering into the lake?
I think one of the things that we're seeing and some of the regulatory agencies are concerned about is when you have marijuana grows and they use fertilizer on their property and then the rains come along, it'll wash that into the river. And so you do have increased levels of nutrients, which primarily are an issue for growing algae and other types of water.
Green flowing
yes.
things, yeah.
Right, which... If you get a lot of it and the algae then dies, then it can take up oxygen in the water, which the fish need. So that's the main concern, is that by growing weeds more than you would have normally, you can cause some biological problems.
So if we do have the El Nino that is hoped for, and we do have the issues leading down into the lake, does the river... Or rivers. I mean, we throw in the Eel and Van Dusen and Mattole and all the others that have been impacted in the Trinity. Do they benefit? And will the nitrogen level be less because the algae will get blown out or blown through the system, so to speak, because of the additional rain, because of some of this additional particulate matter that's in there kind of helping to scrub it out?
I think if we get large rainfall events and large flows in the system, there will be a number of benefits. One is that the gravel gets redistributed, and that's the spawning bed for different fish. Also, high flows tend to attract fish and allow them to move further upstream. And so I think all of those benefits come from high flow rates. In fact, if you look at fish populations and you correlate them with flow rates, especially in the Central Valley, generally higher flows have been beneficial for fish.
Cool. Kia and Fisherman.
And Fisherman.
Yeah. KINS. News and information time. It's 8:42. We'll be back with more from Paul Heliker.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Paul Hilliker. Paul, some of the different things that are out there, planning is one of the big deals, obviously. The other general managers in the other districts throughout the state, are they wrestling with the same stuff that we are at this end of the state?
I think the situation we have here is a little bit unique, and they're somewhat envious of us up here because we do have average water supplies, and we also have water available to put to different uses because of the fact that the pulp mills are no longer operating. So we're looking at augmenting stream flows to benefit fish, or we'd love to have more local customers using water. And also,
but if we had more locals using water, that would screw us up with the state mandate to reduce the water use, right? Isn't there a link on that one?
Because of the fact that we don't have the pulp mills operating, we haven't really faced that situation with this current conservation requirement. But I think the point of the state's conservation rules was not to affect industry. They don't want to constrain any kind of economic development in the state. So I think we, just as I mentioned earlier, we have a special alternative compliance mechanism. So I think if we had any local industry operating with our surface water system, that we'd have some similar kinds of rules.
The last couple of years has been a lot of discussion about selling water. Pulp mill not needing it, whether it's baggies, whether it's choo-choo trains, whether it's a huge whatever. Is there any movement on any of that stuff, or is water still cheap enough that the transportation costs haven't been overcome?
I think the situation that we've seen, and we have discussed the option that we've been pursuing with some of the other water agencies, particularly in the Bay Area. The situation that they're finding themselves in is that they've been looking for additional water supplies, but ironically, this year with the conservation mandates and the governor's rules, and some of them have been reducing their use by 40%, they have more water than they need. So they have not been buying.
They had enough leeway
to
cut 40% and not have everything dead and dying?
Well, everything's dead and dying in the front yards in Pleasanton and Contra Costa County.
Brown golf courses. But they're able to survive and people haven't been impacted. You know, the plants may have been taking a beating, but not people.
Well, one of the issues is trees. If you don't water your lawn and you have trees growing in your lawn, then the trees aren't going to have any water supply during the summertime. So that's one thing that the state's been trying to urge people to do, is be sure and take care of your trees, because we don't want to lose the urban canopy, which itself provides benefits. So, but back
don't water too much, but just your trees.
Just your trees.
That's got to be a weird message to get out there.
Hydrology is complicated. But we did look at what would be the cost of putting a pipeline from where we take the water at Essex, because we want to leave the water in the river to get down there. And provide the habitat benefits. So, but taking it from Essex and either going east over to the Sacramento River drainage or south down to the Russian River drainage, it's on the order of $1,500 an acre foot, all the way up to $3,000 an acre foot. And you compare that to what?
So, what's that pencil in at on a year? I have no idea.
Well,
to have any impact.
That's mainly for comparison purposes to see what other agencies are paying.
If
you look at the water transfer market this summertime, I think the maximum cost, and this was in the Central Valley, was about $800 an acre foot. So we're still twice to three times that price.
Yeah, it wasn't going to fly.
We haven't found anybody yet, but we're still looking.
Yeah, there's a sucker born every day. Isn't that what Barnum said?
Well, they are looking at different alternatives. For example, in the Contra Costa area and all the major districts around the bay, they're looking at desalination, and the costs there are somewhere on the order of $2,000 an acre.
You could have a couple of those instead of a bullet train. Thanks for coming by, Paul. We've been Talking Shop with Paul Hilliker. Join us tomorrow. More Talk Shop. So I think about making a good day. I just wanted to see you.